Starting here at the bottom of Vav Amud Bet, about 11 lines from the bottom, it says, "Hey, Rabbi Yeshua ben Zarus, ben Chamiv shel Rabbi Meir, lifnei Rabbi." So they have a testimony from Yeshua ben Zarus, ben Chamiv, the son of his father-in-law. I don't know if it's Zarus or Rabbi Yeshua is the brother-in-law of Rabbi Meir, lifnei Rabbi. They were before Rabbi al Rabbi Meir. The testimony was about Rabbi Meir himself. She achal alesho yerek bebeit shan. He ate a leaf of a Yerek in Beit Shan. It seems to be without taking off Maestro, Trumot, just ate it straight out. And based on that, Vihitir Rebbe at Beit Shan Kula al Yado. Because of that, Rebbe determined that Beit Shan was no longer a part of Eretz Yisrael. Since it wasn't a part of Eretz Yisrael, then you didn't have to take off Trumot and Masrot in that area. Chibru alav achiv hu Beit Aviv. All of his brothers, his family, you know, the Chachamim. It said to him, Amalu, place where everybody else was no yisur until this point, atatin hugbo heter, suddenly you come along and it's mutar. It says, darashta mikraze, v'kiteit nechash nechoshet asher asam Moshe. He ground up the nechash nechoshet that Moshe made. This week's parsha, they made the copper snake in order to take care of the problem that the Jews were having in the Midbar with the snakes biting them. So v'ki adayamim ahima ayubnei yisrael mekatrin lo. Because in that time period, or until then, they used to worship this copper snake, and they used to call it Nechushatan. Efshor ba'asa velivo vi'aro. Ba'yehoshafat velo bi'aro. You have Asa and Yehoshafat, both who are very good kings, who eliminated all the Avodah Zarah, and yet the Nechash Nechoshet is still there. Hello, call Avodah Zarah Shvalom Asa v'yehoshafat bi'arum. Ela makomi nichulo avotav lehitgader bo. That he was given this opportunity. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was given this opportunity. These are one of the six things that are mentioned in the Mishnah in Psachim. Legabei Chizkiyahu HaMelech, six things that he did. Three, hodulo, shlosha lo hodulo. This is one of the items that the Chachamim said that he did a good job with, was crushing and taking away the nechash and nechoshet. So afani, makomi avutai lehitgader bo. My forefathers, those who became before me, gave me some room to be mechadesh something. Mikan. From here we learn, talmid chacham shamar davar alacha she'ein mazichin oto. That if a talmid chacham says a chiddush, a new alacha, ein mazichin oto. So now we have ein mazichin oto, ve'amrei la ein maznichim oto, ve'amrei la ein mazchichim oto. See all the three different lishonot. First being mazichin means ein mabdilin. Oto, that you don't separate him out. We don't say, take back what you said. Ein maznichim, he says we don't push him away. We don't say, get out of here, that that's what you said. Mishaktim et rab, we don't dismiss your wording. And number three is, ein mazkichim. We don't say to him, look, oh, you're a balgaiva, and that's why you're coming up with something new, and you're not listening to what the real aloha is. Or we don't say, lift up your, whatever you're saying, and throw it out of here. So all three of those solutions. Mandamar mazichin. One who says, Mazikim Tiyachtev, Lo Yizach HaChoshen, Me'al HaEfod. The Choshen may never separate from the Efod. So that's also Lo Yizach. Over here is Mazikhino, that means we don't separate him out. We don't push him away. Madamar, In Maznichim Tiyachtev, Ki Lo Yiznach, the Olam Hashem. That Hashem will not always be dismissive of us or disgusted with us. So it's over here. We don't dismiss and we don't find repulsive his words. Madamar Mazikhim, the Tzman, Misharabu, Zechuche HaLev. Rabu machloket b'Israel, when the people became more and more haughty and self-interested, then there was more machloket in Klal Yisrael because people weren't able to be mevater to get to the emet. They're always worried about their day. They were omid b'datam. Even one of those three lishonot. There's two important things that we learned here. One, the first is the Rebbe was mater Beit Shan. Rebbe's mater Beit Shan, which means if you come up to Beit Shan, it's within Eretz Yisrael. Past Beit Shan is not going to be classified as Eretz Yisrael. And Beit Shan itself, which is what Rabbi did, he said Beit Shan itself is not part of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you could eat in Beit Shan without being taken off Trumot in Masrot. The implications from that are that in Chutz La'aretz, one is not Mafrish Trumot in Masrot, in Chutz La'aretz. And we take that as a given today, that that's the way it is, that nobody takes off Trumot in Masrot in Chutz La'aretz. Tosafot over here discusses what exactly Rabbi did. He says Tema. He says Mashma the Ein Maser Noeg b'Chutz La'aretz. Tosus says that it doesn't sound like from here the Maser is not Noeg in Chutz La'aretz. Yet Tosus brings place in Tema. Verak Ad Kama Mucha Kula Shmaita the Truma Noeg b'Chutz La'aretz. Says that there are many other subyot that say that sounds like there is Truma in Chutz La'aretz. So Rashi over here gives one distinction, and he distinguishes in this way. Number one, we know in Trumot and Masrot there's a Dindo Raita. The din d'oraita is dagan, tirosh, v'yitzhar. Dagan being grains, tirosh is grapes, wine, Nitzar are olives, olive oil. Those are the three things mina Torah that require trumot and masrot. Beyond that, we have trumot and masrot from peirot, and then trumot and masrot from yerek. Everybody agrees that yerek is a din derabanan. 90%, 95% of the Rishonim also believe that peirot is also a din derabanan. Now, based on that, Rashi says, well, things that are a din derabanan in Eretz Yisrael, they were not gozer, they did not put in chutz laretz. Whereas things that were deoraita in Eretz Yisrael, they did have derabanan in chutz laretz. Therefore, he says that dagan tiroshin tzar, the chutz laretz they did have. Trumat yerek, which is what we're speaking about here with Rabbi Meir, doesn't exist in chutz laretz, and that's how they were matir over here. Because we're talking about trumat yerek. Trumat yerek in chutz laretz, there's nothing to discuss. It's all derabanan in Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to be institute that in chutz laretz. Tosus brings that explanation of Rashi and says, it doesn't make sense because there are other places where we see that even by trumot that are not dagan tirosh nitzar, we see that they were no hagen chutz laretz. So the second answer he brings is from the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam suggests that we're talking about Demai. We're not talking about tevel vadai, things that are tevel for sure. It's demai, things that come from Amaretz. You're not sure if trumot and masrot were taken off of them. That's what it means here. There's no demai in chutz laretz. When it comes to sfeikot like this, in chutz laretz we don't deal with these sfeikot, because you're dealing already with a level derabanan, and then you're dealing with a sfeika on top of that derabanan, so they're mekil. In Eretz Yisrael, by demai, we force you to take care of the issue with demai when it's a sfeik, whether the trumot and masrot taken off of it, then we make you be mafrish again, in order to ensure that there are no problems here, at least the Shumat Maser, make sure that you deal with those issues. So then he brings over Yerushalmi, it creates problems for the Rabbeinu Tam, and then he brings down that the Ri found another Yerushalmi. It's interesting, the Ri found the Yerushalmi in Chalo, and based on that, he says that the Yerek b'chutz larek enuig bo lo maser velo truma, that by Yerek, there is no trumot and masrot in chutz larek. By peirot, shar peirot, everything else, Noheget Shuma Gedola, Avalo Maser. They were Noheget Shuma Gedola, but nothing else, not Maser. Aval Gadagan Tirosh Vitar, Chaimim Legamre, Bebe Shuma Bebe Maser. So Ri finds Yerushalmi and Chama that they're gradations in Chutz Laretz. This is somewhat akin to what Rashi did, although it's not exactly the same, because he had an in-between stage. He says, Yerek, they did nothing in Chutz Laretz. Dagan Tirosh Vitar, they did everything. So that agrees with Rashi. The difference is in Peirot. Peirot, Rashi says they're like Yerek, and they didn't do anything in Chutz Laretz. The Ri says no, that they had this in-between status, peirot, and in chutz laretz they took off trumot, and they didn't take off masrot. Just truma gedolah, but not masrot. So that's the answer of the Ri. Then, the final thing that Tosfos says is, okay, what do we do about the fact that we don't take off trumot and masrot today? Both, based on the Rabbeinu Tam, as well as the Ri, there would be an obligation for us to take off trumot and masrot in chutz laretz. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, as long as it's not demai, you'd have to be mafrish. According to the Ri, if it's not Yerek, you'd have to be mafish, at least Truma from Peirot. From Dagan to Rosh Nitzar, you'd have to take off the full set of Trumot and Masrot. So why is it that we don't take off Trumot and Masrot in Chutz Laretz? Tosfos asks this in a number of places. Again, what we take for granted, the Tosfos working on, he says, I don't know why. So Rabbeinu Tam gives the first answer, which is that we don't own our land. We don't own the land in Chutz Laretz. Rabbeinu Tam says, Mefarj de'ena sadot chashuvot kemo shelanu. We have to pay taxes on them. We pay a tax in order to keep the land. The government owns the land, and we have to pay a tax to stay on the land. You don't pay the tax, you're thrown off the land. In their days, they were not mafrish in places where they had to give taska. Taska was the taxation, the land taxation. So in places where they gave land taxation, they weren't mafrish trumot masrot. Places where they did pay the taxes, then they would be mafrish trumot masrot. That's to do with whether you own the land or not. So that's one answer that the Rabbeinu Tam gives. Now, that's a question with the Rabbeinu Tam. We had this with the Ran and the Dorim. The Ran and the Dorim talks about that in terms of dinin machuta dino, the ability of the kings to do whatever they want, and chutz laretz to move you around, to do as they please. So the need to pay taxes on the land, does that really forfeit your ownership on the land? Meaning here in Eretz Yisrael, in other countries of America, you pay taxes on the land. Does that mean it's not yours? Does that mean it doesn't belong to you? Not necessarily. It's an obligation of the government. The question of how much government ownership there is versus your ownership is a question. So the Tosfos gives alternative answers here. It says, "Be'od yesh lefaresh," which Tosfos mentions in other places. Shema rechokim eretz Yisrael kamonu lo tiknu chachamim. So their solution is to say, well, the Sfardim who live in the countries around Eretz Yisrael, they need to take off Trumot and Masrot because that's where the Gzerot Chachamim was. Places, far away places, like Europe, like us, in France, they never thought of those places and they never were instituted Trumot and Masrot. It's the only places close to Eretz Yisrael, so people wouldn't either leave Eretz Yisrael because of the benefits, so they made them take off Trumot and Masrot as well. Never do it so that the Aniyim could feed off them during the Shvit. When there was nothing in Eretz Yisrael, they had a place to go, right? Outside of Eretz Yisrael, where they would get the Matnot Aniyim outside of Eretz Yisrael. So they're Metakin in the areas close to Eretz Yisrael, but distant places they were not Metakin. That would solve their problem in Europe as well. The last is Od Yimish Vashim, Shinimtza B'Yushalmi. So then the Yushalmi says, Da'ak Tamar Mechziv Alam Potur Min Adamai, Lav Dafka. And when they say that it's Potur Min Adamai, that's the Rabbeinu Tam's proof that we're talking about Demai is what's Potur outside of Eretz Yisrael. Lav Dafka, it doesn't really mean Demai, Ela Af Min Avadai. And that's what we're so mechan. That the idea that it was in Yishalmi was matir in Chutz La'aretz, is matir everything in Chutz La'aretz. And that's the, based on Yishalmi, it says, Achibau Rubim, Ubitlum. They were mafrish Trumot Masrot until the Rubim came, and then Mevatalahem. It says, Manihu Rubim, Targuminina, Amrab Zira, Amrab Yudu B'Shem Shmo. So they talk about these Chachamim, Mevatel, the Trumot Masrot in Chutz La'aretz. So based on the Yishalmi, we're not mafrish Trumot Masrot in Chutz La'aretz. But it's interesting only because Tosfos does not take it for granted. And then we just assume, oh yeah, no Trumot HaMasrot in Chutz La'aretz. Tosfos says, well, it doesn't seem so obvious from the Gemaras and from the Yerushalmi that that's the case. It seems to be a much later stage where that happened. Tosfos tries to draw distinctions about why they're not taking off Trumot HaMasrot in the areas that they are living. The next thing he mentions is, which is another important thing, is that a person is not to be Mechadesh something. That we are bound by the Mesora, but there is also room for Chidush. There's room for people to innovate in Halacha, and to have new ideas and find new ways to be matir. Here really it's talking about the tzad heter, not the tzad isur. We don't need new ways to be osur things, but we need new ways to be matir. Tosfos over here makes an important distinction and says that, wait a minute, oh, so until now they had all the bamot that Shlomo put in, or the wives of Shlomo put in, how come they didn't take them off? Why don't we answer, oh, that they left them around so that he could do something? Tosfos says that when it comes to things that are obviously wrong, we don't say to you, oh, they left them for the next generation to take care of. Now, everybody knows that the bamot were problematic. They should have eliminated them, and therefore they're held responsible for them. On the other hand, when it came to Kitate, Nachash and Nechoshet, the Nechash and Nechoshet was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. Al Pi Adibur, it was done on Tzivoy Hashem. They were afraid to cut it up and chop it up. Even though it had led to Avodah Zarah, they were afraid to deal with it because of the Tzad that was made by Moshe, by the Tzivoy Hashem. So that's what it means over here. They left him the opportunity to deal with it, meaning that he had the ability or something compelled him to deal with it and said, even though it was made by Moshe, there's a need to get rid of it. And that's why he took a bold step and did that. So we don't blame the others for not doing it because they had a good reason. When it comes to something like this, and we say, oh, makom inichu avotav, we have to say that there was a good reason that the avot would have left it around, that he would come along and be able to do something about it. Now, it has to be that they would have had ample reason not to be matir and not to do these things, and therefore there's room to be michadish, there's room to open up a new door. Right now, the Gemara is going to question this position of Rabbi, which is matrifla Yehuda Breit Rabbi Shimon Pazi, umi ikal amadamar Beit Shan la Eretz Yisrael here. Is there anyone who agrees that Beit Shan is not from Eretz Yisrael? Meaning, assuming that Beit Shan is definitely from Eretz Yisrael, dichtiv, v'lo rish minashe, et Beit Shan ve'et benota, ve'et Tanach ve'et benota. So here we have the psukim in Shoftim, which say that it was part of Chelek of Menashe Beit Shan, northern end of Chelek of Menashe, and we see that they didn't conquer that area, that they took them as a tax, subjugated the people there, they had to pay taxes to them, but they were supposed to eliminate them, they're supposed to throw them out, and they'll later become a problem for B'nai Menashe that they lived there. But we see that Beit Shan is mentioned within the borders of Eretz Yisrael that Menashe conquered. Beit Shan is a part of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, Ishtamite, Hadamar B'Shim Ben Eliakim, Mishim Rav Lazar B'dat, Shor B'Shim Elazar Ben Shamua. He forgot this memra, which is Harbei Krachim Kavshum Olei Mitzrayim. Many places, the people came out of Mitzrayim, meaning the time of Yoshua, they conquered them. V'lo Kavshum Olei Bavel. Those that came in from Bavel did not succeed in conquering those areas when they came back. Because Savar, Kedusha Rishona Kidusha L'Shaita V'lo Kidusha L'Tidavo. It comes to the first Kedusha, the first time that they inherited in Eretz Yisrael. That Kedusha was temporary, as long as they lived there. But once they were thrown out, that Kedusha went away. And when they came back from Bavel, and Kedusha Shniyaz Kidusha L'Shaita U'L'Tidavo, the Olei Bavel were Mekadesh those areas for permanent Kedusha. They left out other areas where Olei Mitzrayim had been, but they didn't get to. When they left them, here it says they left them intentionally, which is so that the Aniyim and Shvi'it could eat from those areas, so they wouldn't have Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. and they would be mafrish trumot and masrot from those areas, but not keep shvi'it. And the aniyim would be able to survive in those areas that were adjacent to Eretz Yisrael. They're really in Eretz Yisrael proper, the original boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. But Bnei Bavel did not conquer them. Over here it sounds like they did it intentionally. Might have been just as equally that they didn't do it intentionally. They just couldn't. They physically couldn't conquer all those areas. When they came up, Olei Bavel, they didn't have so many people, and they started small inside of Yerushalayim. They built around the center of Yerushalayim, and then they expanded from there. It's only much later on, by the second bite, that they expand, and large tracts of Eretz Yisrael are taken back, but that's a much later date, not in the original Olei Bavel that came up. So that's the answer to Yehuda Breid, Rav Shimon ben Pazi's question. He says, isn't Beit Shan part of Eretz Yisrael? Yes, but that was in the time of Yehoshua. By Olei Bavel, which is what we're discussing now, in the time of Rabbi, that Olei Bavel did not conquer that area, or did not, they were not Mekadesh, the area of Beit Shan, nor that the Aniyim could go there. Beit Shan was part of the original. Now in Shvi'it, you'll see many times that they talk about, if you'll see on the signs, that it's only from areas that were not from Olei Bavel, and that were more makpid to do things within areas that are classified as being Olei Bavel versus Olei Mitzrayim, because of this distinction in Kedusha between the areas of Mitzrayim versus Bavel. And we know that there's a huge machloket HaRishonim. We discuss this every time we speak about Kedusha Ta'aretz, that the Rambam is of the opinion that Yerushalayim was Nitkatsha permanently in the first time that they came in, and that Eretz Yisrael was only Nitkatsha in the second time that they came in. And we always see that Rav Soloveitchik, who has the explanation of the Rambam, it's a very difficult Rambam, why he separates between Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. Generally, Rashi connects the two and says, which if you believe that Kidusha Rishona, you believe that's both for Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. And if you believe that Kidusha Shnia, then you have both for Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. We don't separate them. The Rambam separates the two. And the Rav Soloveitchik explains that when it came to Yeshua's conquering of Eretz Yisrael, they first conquered Eretz Yisrael and then Yerushalayim. So then when the Shekhinah comes into Yerushalayim, they build the Mikdash, the Shekhinah is permanent, and that Kidusha is permanent. But that permanence and that Yerushalayim happened after the Kibush of the Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Shekhinah is permanent in that state. But Eretz Yisrael is not permanent because it was kibush by force. Kibush by force can be taken away by force also. So when they lost the land, they lost the Kedusha. Yet in the second time they came up, and there was a Kedusha Shnia, Yerushalayim was the first place they went to. And the Kedusha of the Shekhinah was the first thing that happened. Then they only went out, and they took the Eretz Yisrael by chazaka, not by force, but by living there. And they expanded out from Yerushalayim. So the Kedusha emanated from Yerushalayim, not from Eretz Yisrael. And therefore the Kedusha, the Shekhinah, spread from Yerushalayim to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why it was Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael. That's Rav Soloveitchik's explanation of the Shita of the Rambam. We know the Shita of the Raivud, who disagrees with the Rambam and says that even Kedusha Shnia was not permanent. And therefore the Raivud says that you can go up in Har HaBayit. You can walk around. There is no permanent Kedusha. It's gone. That means today, Shumot Masrot, everything's Derabonon. All of these items, that because there is no permanent Kedusha, that Kedusha Rishona and Shnia were not permanent, according to the Raivud. And then we had the Balei HaTosfot. The Balei HaTosfot have many opinions. They have an opinion like the Rambam, and that splits up Yerushalayim from Eretz Yisrael. But they also have an opinion like the Rambam, but in reverse. That Kedusha Eretz Yisrael was permanent the first time, and Kedusha Yerushalayim was only permanent the second time, and not the first time. So they have opinions, the Tosfos have a lot of opinions back and forth, as well as opinions like Rashi, which is the two Kedushot are connected. You have Rishonim all over the place, but obviously have major nafkaminot for us here, first of all, about entering Har HaBayit, whether you can go up to Har HaBayit or not. That depends on whether the Kedusha was permanent in Yerushalayim. And number two, in terms of Trumot Masrot, whether they're Din De'oraita or Din De'rabbanan, might be affected by this. You know, is the Kedusha permanent or not permanent in Eretz Yisrael? So that's just as an aside to this. And then obviously the difference between Olei Mitzrayim and Olei Bavel makes a difference. That even if we think that there is a Kedusha that's permanent, and it's Kedusha Shnia, that is a much more limited area. And therefore places possibly that, like Beit Shan, which Rebbe mentions, but other places down further south and up in the north, many times you'll see again during Shvi'it, they'll demarcate them as being places that were only Olei Mitzrayim places, that they are more makel the Gabei Shvi'it in those areas. Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyahu the Rabbi Zira, Ha Rabbi Meir, Aleb Alma Hu De'Ochil. Wait a minute, how do we ever come to this whole conclusion? They were blowing something out of proportion. All that Rabbi Meir did was eat a leaf. And we know that when you're out in the field, right, you can grab something arai off the tree and you can eat it. When you're picking, you can eat it. It's only once there's a kviut, is there a problem that you have to take off my trumot or masrot. Before that point in time, you just pop it in your mouth and you can eat it. It's not a problem. Samalei Magudachle. He didn't eat it straight off the yerek. He ate it off after it was wrapped in a bundle of vegetables. Vitnan, then we have a Mishnah in Masrot, which says, Yerek, Hane Agad. Yerek that normally, when it's picked, it's tied together, it's bound. Then Mishi Yagad, the Chiyuv Masrot takes place once it's bound. That's what generates the Chiyuv Masrot. So over here he took it from a bound bunch of vegetables. And therefore it was already Chayav in Masrot. And it was a Mafrish. But Dilma Lava Date says, maybe he wasn't thinking. Maybe he didn't think about the fact that he just took it and he forgot to take up Tumat Masrot. And then we have the Hashta Behem Tanjil, Tzadikim in a Koshbuk, maybe Takalaya, then Tzadikim at Smamil Koshke. This is why this is over here, is because we had that same line on Friday's daf, which is over here, Koshbuk protects the behemoth of Tzadikim from making a mistake. He's not going to protect a tzaddik like Rabbi Meir from making a mistake. Again, Tosfos mentions it only has to do with achila, the ingesting of food, because that's most. It's something that, in particular, we wouldn't want the tzaddikim to have. Not that they don't make any mistakes. Just in this area, Hashem protects them from making mistakes in eating. He says, "V'tilma yiser alehem mimakom acher." Who says that he didn't take off masrot? You didn't see him take off masrot, but he might have had some yarek in his house, and he says, "Dad, in my house is maser on this." So Mar says, "Lo nechshedu chavirim lechom shalom min hamukaf." Chavirim always take off tshumot masrot min hamukaf. Now min hamukaf is two things. One is min hamuvchar, it's from the best, but also min hasamuch, things that are adjacent, things that are in proximity to each other. You take off tshumot masrot, you can't have the tshumot masrot be in your house and you're out here taking it off on your yerek. They have to be proximate. They're next to each other. So over here, you would have seen him do something. It had to be nearby, whatever he was doing. So he goes, Maris, okay, I'll make it really nearby. Maybe he said, the right side, the northern side of the leaf is Chumot Masrot and his mafresh on it, and then the other side is what he ate. Amalei. Chazi man gavar rabo de kemaseid alei. So it's the same thing in the Gemara and Brachot. There's a testimony in the Gemara Brachot, the Gabei, Rabbi Yochanan, and the Gemara there says the same thing. Look who's giving the testimony. You're not talking about some schlock off the street that's giving you the testimony. Here we're talking about the testimony here is brought by Rabbi Yeshua ben Zeruz, ben Chamib shel Rabbi Meir. It's a very reliable person. Now if he tells us this, he's not going to just tell us some story about Rabbi Meir. He's telling us a story about Rabbi Meir because he wants us to learn something from it. And the fact that he tells us this story implicates that there was something important about the story. The only thing that could be important about Rabbi Meir eating leaf of a vegetable in Beit Shan is because he didn't take up Tshumot Masrot. That's the only significance of something like that. From that, we're going to conclude, and that's why Rabbi concluded, that Beit Shan must be outside the areas that were conquered by Olei Bavel. Now the Gemara wants to know, what is this case? My Behem Tam Shel Tzadikim. You mentioned it twice already. What is this case of Behem Tam Shel Tzadikim? The Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, Rabbi Ka'azu Lebdon Shvoyim, was on his way to do the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvoyim, redeeming those that were in captivity. Paga Beit Beginai Naro. On his way, he bumped into this river that was blocking him from crossing. Amarle Ginai Chalukli Memach Vavor Becha. Says to the Ginai, split your waters so that I can go through. I need to walk through and you're blocking me from doing the mitzvah. So this is a great line. Amarlei, Ata olech lasot ritzon koncha, ani olech lasot ritzon koni. You're going to do the bidding of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm doing the bidding of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ata safek oseh safek yata oseh. You're a safek whether you're going to succeed at doing the Pidyon Shvuyim. Ata ani vaday oseh. I'm definitely doing what Hashem asked. So why should I split to let you through? So Amarlei, im yata cholek, gozrani alecha shelo yavor b'chamayim le'olam. Says, either you split, or you're going to be a dry riverbed. Cholekli. The river splits for Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. Havahau gavra davidare chite lepischa. Over there was a man who was carrying grains to make matzah with them. As Rashi points out, it's a mitzvah. Dei v'shmartem in a matzah, demitchila tchina v'arkada, boi shimu l'shem matzah. Shmura matzah, you have to do l'shem matzah. Again, we discussed this just days ago about the difference in shmura matzah. Rashi over here is saying shmura matzah means you have to do l'shem matzah. But there's also the other side of shmura matzah, which we know means that it has to be shamur from becoming chametz. So here, if he's going to have to pass through the river and the grains are going to come wet, that's going to be a problem with shimur from detection against chametz. Also, the shim or the shem mitzvah, so he has to do with the shem matzah. So he says, split for this person. Amalei chalukle, nami lahai de mitzvah asik. This guy's doing a mitzvah. Split for him as well. Chalukle, it splits. Then there was this Arab merchant that was coming to Lova Vadayo, who was accompanying them, who is the livui for them. Amalei chalukle, nami lahai. Make sure you split for him too. Dololema kachosim lebnei livia. That's how we treat people who accompany another person. Here he's accompanying them and they're going together so that they have a group together. They can help each other. They can take care of things. So you're going to say, it splits for Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. It splits for this person doing a mitzvah. And that other individual, it doesn't split for him. You have to let him through also. Chalakle, it splits for him. Rabbi Yosef, Kaman Nifish Gavra Mimoshe Vishitin Rivan. How great is Rav Pinchas ben Yair? Greater than Moshe Rabbeinu and the 600,000 that were with him. Diluhatam by Kriyat Yam Suf Chad Zimno. Split once. Here it split three times. Where it says, V'dilma achanami chada zimno. Also over here, it happened one time. Ella, ki Moshe v'shitin ruvan. No, it's like Moshe and the 600,000. What it means is it split once, but Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair was afraid that the water would close back on them. So he spoke along the way, said, don't close on them, don't close on them, and so that he kept it open for all three of them to pass through. Question is, who was he speaking to? Tosa says, who was he speaking to? Tosa says, Shema sar shel yam heshiv lo kach. Maybe he's talking about the one who is in charge, the minister of water, minister of the seas, minister of the waters. That's who he was speaking to. That's one possibility. Tosa says the other possibility is he was talking to himself. He's talking to himself and saying, why isn't the river splitting? So in his own mind, he's speaking. We don't want to assume that he's talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he's getting an answer back. Tosa postulates that it was either possibility that it was a sar shel yam, or the other possibility, which is he was talking to himself. So he was trying to figure out what the problem was, and therefore he was talking to himself. So he got to the point where he's able to get it open so that he could go through. They continue in the story of Pinchas ben Yair. Ikla lahaush pizza. He ended up at a bed and breakfast place where he was stopping on the way to go do pinyon shvuim. Ramulei sare lechamrei loacha. Poured out barley for his donkey that he was riding with and refused to eat. They say, what a finicky animal. Chavtinu. So then they went ahead and they put him into a sifter and they cleaned him out and they took away all the psolet. Loachal. So then they went even further. Nakrinu. They went and cleaned him out biyadayim. They pulled out all the stones. They pulled out all the other stuff. Veloachal. Refused to eat. So you hear this finicky donkey. They're cleaning out all the grains and he won't eat anything. The man says, Amar lehu. The Rav Pinchas ben Yair says to him, Dilma lo masrin. He says, maybe there wasn't chumas and masrus taken off of this. Srinu, vacha. Take out the chumas and masrus, and then he ate. Amar, aniyazu, olechet lasot b'tzon konet, tem achilim otot tivalim. This poor animal is all he's doing. He's working so hard to do the bidding of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that he's servicing Rav Pinchas ben Yair. He's going to the mitzvah of pinyon shvuim and you're feeding him tevel? Of course he's not going to eat. This is a holy donkey. This holy donkey is not going to eat from tevelim. That's what I mean by behemtan shel tzadikim. Behemot tzadikim don't eat things that are problematic. And certainly tzadikim themselves don't eat something that is problematic. Rashi over here points out that chavtinu usually means to bang, to smash them. And Rashi says, don't say that that is disha, the threshing and the beginning processes of the grains, because he says, at that point it would not have been chayv and shmot masrot yet. The animal can eat from that. If that's the case, then there wouldn't have been a problem here, because there's still the kli patan. He says, no, that could be the case. The explanation of Yechavetinu has to be that they shook them in the sifter, not literally that they were crushing them. Umar says, umi mechayvo. Wait a minute. Why is he chayav? Take off shumot ha-masrot of here. Vatsanan, we have a Mishnah. Alokeach lezera, ulu be'ema, kemach le'orot, v'shemen le'ner, v'shemen le'suchbo tekelim, potur mi'admai. Here we're talking about, we're buying from Amayaretz over here. We're talking about grains. We're talking about items that came from an Amayaretz, which have a din of demai. So think whether they're mafrish or not mafrish. When you purchase from an Amayaretz demai for these specific issues, zera, to plant, lebeima, for animal feed, kemach lorot, for working the hides, for tanning the hides, the kemach, the flour that they used was part of the chemicals that they put together, they mixed together to work the hides. V'shemen l'ner, oil to be burnt, v'shemen l'suchbo at the kelim, or shemen to anoint the kelim. All of these are things that are not going to be eaten. They're not going to be consumed by the human beings. So thereby, demai, we will make you, and say if you buy that, you don't have to be mafish trumot ha-masrot in these cases. So here, he's taking grain for his animal, and it's demai. Why should he have to be separate trumot ha-masrot? It says, Hatam ha-itmar lo. On that, we have a statement. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu el shalakhan mitchila de beima. That's if they originally purchased them to give it to Beima. If they originally purchased them for human consumption, and then they decided afterwards to give it to Beima, then it's Chayav Laser. Because when you bought it for humans to use. When you bought it for humans to use, you got to be Mafrish Shumot Masrot. Also here, they bought that grain for humans to use. Afterwards, they gave it to his animal, still needed Shumot Masrot taken off. Vatanya, you have Tanya B'nichut that supports that position. Okay, Achayrot Minashuk Lachila, he purchases fruits in the Shuk. Again, problem of Demai. And then he decides afterwards to give them to his animal. To take off Shumot Masrot. Even though if you bought it directly for animal feed, you wouldn't have to take off Shumot Masrot. But here it says you bought it for yourself first. If you change your mind later, then you have to take off Shumot Masrot because you already gained that status of being Achilat Adam. By Demai, they were Gozer or Mitakin that you have to be separate Shumot Masrot in that case. Continuing with the story of Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Shama Rabbi. Rabbi heard that Rav Pinchas ben Yair was coming. He went out to greet him. Maybe you'll eat by me? Pinchas ben Yair says, yes, I will eat by you. Tzau panav shel Rabbi. Rabbi's face lit up. Amar lo, so Pinchas Beer says back to him, Kimiduma ata shemudu ana miyisrael ani? You think that I am mudur anah? I took a ned there that I will not get anah from any Israel, because Rav Pinchas ben Yair never ate by anybody. He never allowed anyone in to host him. And all of a sudden over here, he acquiesced to Rabbi to host him. Rabbi's so excited. He says, oh, what do you think? I don't eat from other Jews because I took a neder that I won't eat from Jews? Yisrael kedoshim heim. Jews are holy. But the problem is, yesh rutzeh, there are people who want to host ve'en lo, but they don't have the means to host. And they do it. And if I go there, they're going to be giving me more than they can afford, more than they can really afford to do. And that's wrong. Ve'yesh yesh lo, there are people who have the means to host ve'en rutzeh, but they really don't want to host. Tosa says about this, by the way, it's unbelievable. Tosa says, so why they call Kedoshim? These are miserly people. Why they call Kedoshim? Because in the end they do host him. Even though they don't want to give it, but in the end they do host. They call Kedoshim because they host, even though it's not something that they really want to do. Uchti, Pasuk says in Mishlei, Al tuchamek lechem ra'ayin. Don't break bread with someone who is miserly. V'al titav l'tamat omotav. And do not lust after his delicacies. And you shouldn't participate. Ki kamo shar b'nafsho, kein hu achol v'shotav. Yomar l'cha. Because he'll say, come eat, but his heart is not with you. And that he's telling you to come and eat, but that's not really what he wants. So he says, Rabbi, I know about you, you're very wealthy, and I know you want to do the mitzvah, so I don't have this fear about you. I know that you want to do it, and I know you have the capability to do it, so I'm willing to be hosted by you. Demilta de mitzvah katarachna. He says, I'm in a big rush now because I'm in the middle of a mitzvah. I'm going to do Pidyon Shvuyim. Ki adrana, on my way back, atina alayna legabich. I'll come back. On my way back, I'll eat with you. On my way now, I got to pass through, but on the way back, I'll come and stay by you. Ki ato, on his way back, itrame, he came in and he entered. Al bahau pitcha, tabikaimen be kudnaita chivarta. He happened to walk into Rebbe's house through a doorway behind which there were these white mules. Amar malach hamavet bebeito shalzeh. Malach HaMavet, death sits in this doorway. Vani asod etzlo, no way I'm eating over here. This guy keeps the Malach HaMavet in his house. Shama Rabbi, napak lapay. Rabbi heard him and ran out to say to him, oh, okay, I'll take care of the situation. What's the problem here? These white donkeys, and we'll see in a second, are very problematic. They cause damage that is irreparable. Amarle mazvinin lehu, I'll sell them. Amarle, you can't sell them. Lifnei yiver lo tete michshol. If they cause death, if they're problematic in your house, you can't sell them to someone else because they're also problematic for him. That means that you are doing lifnei yiver lo tete michshol. You're selling a dangerous animal to someone else. Says fine. Mifarakna lehu says I'll free them. I'll let them go into the forest. Says mashat hezeka. They're gonna wreak havoc. They're gonna cause damage to other people. You can't do that. So he says akarna lehu. I'm gonna take off their hooves. I'll take off the hardened part of their hooves in order that they can still work. They're still functional. They can still do plowing, but they won't be able to walk far distances. They won't be able to kick people. Says, Ikat Sar Bali Chaim. Says, that's Sar Bali Chaim. You can't do that. Kadlina Lahu. I'll kill them. Says, Ikat Bal Tashkit. That's Bal Tashkit. You can't waste things. Rabbi's trying to give him reasons, and each one of them he's rejecting as being an out of possibility of how to take care of this situation. What's interesting here is about Sar Bali Chaim. We saw in the Gemara that when it comes to Malachim, when it comes to kings, that he used to be Oker. He used to be Oker the Bali Chaim. They used to take off their hooves because they were the horse on which the king rode. And it was inappropriate that anybody used them. The Gemara over there is, what about Tzar Bali Chaim? Over there we saw Rashi, the Tosafot, over there that say that when there's a purpose, there's no din of Tzar Bali Chaim. Tzar Bali Chaim is only when you do something for no purpose. Because it was the king's horse, and they didn't want anybody else to ride it afterwards. It was inappropriate. So it was part of Kavod HaMelech. So since it's part of Kavod HaMelech, they were willing to do it, even though it was Tzar Bali Chaim. Over here, it's interesting, because here there is a purpose to taking them off. Here also, to protect against other people getting hurt. Yet over here, he says, Tzar Bali Chaim. Maybe it's not a strong enough reason, because there are other alternatives, even though he rejects all the other alternatives. But it's interesting that here the Gemara upholds Tzar Bali Chaim, even in the face of some purpose. Ad havakame vatesh vei tuva. He was pressing him hard to stay. Gavatu rabinayu. A mountain grew up between them and separated them. Bacha Rabbi v'amar. Rabbi begins to cry and says, Ma b'chayim kach. That this is during his lifetime, Hashem protected him. In their death, how much more? What does it mean in their lifetime? But Pinchas Beir never ate by anybody. This is going to be the first time in his life that he ever went by somebody's house. And he had a shita that he didn't want to eat by other people. And Hashem makes it so that his shita stood. That even when Rabbi invited him and he said he would come, that something happened that prevented him from eating there. So the Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, how do we know that? Gedolim tzadikim b'mitatam yoter b'mechayim. How do we know that in their death, tzadikim are greater than in their lifetime? Because by Bekever Elisha, we know that by the grave where Elisha was buried, it says Bekever Elisha, by he heim kovrim ish, They were burying somebody there. V'nei ra'u et agdud. They saw the army approaching, that there was an attack happening. V'shlichu et ish. They said, we're out of here. We're not staying around for this. They threw him into the cave. V'kever Elisha. They threw him into the cave where Elisha's bones were. V'yelech v'yiga ha'ish batzmont Elisha. This person touches the bones of Elisha, vayichi, he comes to life. Vayakam al raglav, and he stood up and walked away. So now we have here that Elisha brought him back to life. Rashi claims that over here, what does it mean that in his lifetime, this is greater in his death than his lifetime? Rashi says because in his lifetime when he was revived, the Ben HaShunamit, he first sent Gehazi with his staff and so on and so forth to try to, it didn't work, and then he comes himself. He puts his face against his face, put his hands on his hands, and then he davens to do all this to bring him to life. Over here, he just touched him and he came to life. So you see how great the tzaddikim are. Tosfot says, no, that's not a good explanation, but rather, that by chayei tzaddikim, that they come into contact with many rishayim. Many rishayim come into a contact with a tzaddik during his lifetime, including Gehazi, was working with him. But in their death, you see that they didn't allow for this Rasha to be buried near him, brought him back to life so that the Rasha would walk away and not be near Elisha. So even though in their lifetime they have interactions and they get contact with Rishayim, in their death, it prevented them. Maybe Dilma Lekume Be Birkata De Eloyahu. Maybe the reason it came to life here was because of the Bracha of Eliyahu, Dichtiv, Vayi Na Pishnayim Beruchacha Alai. So that you will have double the power of Nevuah, double the power that I had. Elisha's Eliyahu's Talmid. And he gave his Talmud, Elisha, double what he had. And we know that Eliyahu brought one person back to life. So Elisha only brought one person to life, back to life in his lifetime. That was the Ben HaShunamit. So he needed to be Mekayim the double. He needed something else to come to life. I'm like, Yochi, Hainu the Tanya. Over there we have a bright that explains the puzzle. It says, Araglav, Amad, Udveitolo Halach. That when it says he brought him to life, he stood on his feet. He stood on his feet, walked away, and then dropped. He didn't go back home. He didn't bring him back to life fully. According to you, he should have brought back fully to life. So then where is the kiyum of this promise that Eliyahu says, Elisha will double the power of Eliyahu? He cured Naaman from his tzarat. That having tzarat is like being dead. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's speaking about his sister Miriam, after she has tzarat, says, don't let her be like a mate. So Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lama nikra shman yemim. Why are they called yemim? These white mules. She'ematam mutalat ala briot. People fear them. Amar Rabbi Chanina, who was a doctor, says, Miyamai lo she'alni adam al makab preda levana v'chaya. Nobody ever asked me about a kick from these white mules and then lived. He says, V'aka chazina techaya. We see people live after they get kicked by a white mule. He says, Ema v'chayat. V'chaya means on the person. Zachar, it's referencing the person. V'chayat is referencing as female, it's referencing the makah. The makah never heals. So they get a makah, never heals. V'aka zina demitze. We say, no, they do get healed. Now he says, D'chivar en resh kar ayu. That's only true when they have white at the end of their legs, all the way to the bottom, then they are considered to be very dangerous. The ones that you're seeing are not really the white ones. But when they have white at the end of their legs, those, there's no cure for them, Kamrinan. Ain't old milvado. There's no one besides a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Ain't old milvado means with anything. Amar Rabbi China, afilu kshafim. Even kshafim, what seems to be this sorcery, witchcraft, even up there, a Kodesh Baruch Hu allows it to happen. She wanted to take off the dust from under the feet of Rabbi Chanina. Some reason that was used in Kshafim, and she was able to control him or make him die or have bad things happen to him. So Amrullah, he saw that she was trying to do this. He says, Shkule, take it. Lo mistaya miltech. It won't work. Ain't old novado. There's no one besides your Kodesh Baruch Hu. If Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't want it to work, it won't work. Hashem wants it to work, it will work. You want to take the dust, go ahead. You're not going to succeed, because I know that Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to protect me. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lama Nikra Shman Kshafim. Then Rabbi Yochanan say about Kshafim, Shem Machishin Pamal Yishamala. They work against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. They do things that Hashem's not, goes there. Hashem says that the person doesn't need to die now, and it kills them. Shani Rabbi Chanina, Tenefisha Zechutei. Rabbi Chanina wasn't worried because he had plenty of zchuyot. Now Rabbi Chanina's stam in the Gemara is Rabbi Chanina bar Chama. But there's a very similar story with regards to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa in Tanit has a very similar story by a scorpion. There was a scorpion that used to bite people and went by there. And it was killing people, and everybody's worried. So Rabbi Chanina goes out and says, it's not the problem, scorpion's not the problem. Rabbi Chanina stepped on the hole, the scorpion came out and bit him and died. The scorpion dies. And so Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa says, I want you to know, it's not the scorpion that is memit mechayei ala chait gorem, it's the sin. You sin, the scorpion's able to bite you and kill you. You don't sin, the scorpion dies when he bites you. And over there, the people said, "Ole adam shepagah bo akrav, ve'oy le akrav shepagah bo Reb Chanina ben Dosa." That's a very similar type of story over here with the sorcery. Kshafim are not going to affect you. You have ein na'ud milvado, you believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Kodesh Baruch Hu dictates. You don't have to worry about it. Nafish tzuchute. Rabbi Chanina, ein adam nukif etzbo milamata, elim kei machrizin alav milamala. Person does not hurt. Now here, etzbo sounds like his thumb. Big thumb. In the game, they, upstairs, there's a gzera as such. The Rabbeinu Gershom says he's talking about his big toe. Shneamar, me Hashem mitzadei geber konanu. From Hashem, person's footsteps are established. Badam mayavin darko. A man doesn't know his ways. I mean, a man doesn't understand the ways of God, but Hashem makes everybody's ways go. What's very interesting here is a quote from Tehillim and Mishlei. Pasuk and Mishlei reads, Me Hashem mitzadei gaver, vadam mayavin darko. It doesn't have the word konanu. Pasuk and Tehillim has, Me Hashem mitzadei gaver konanu. So I don't know if that was a later addition that they added in konanu, that's from it, but the Pasuk and Mishlei has everything besides the word konanu as all Pasuk. So it's just interesting that they quote from two different places. Amar of Elazar, dam nikof miratzeh kedamola. Dam that from a bump like this, from your thumb or your big toe, that is miratzeh like a damola. Amar of a bigodel yamin, has to be on the right side, on the right thumb, the one that you use all the time, and you hit it hard. Munikov sheni, and the second time, you already hit it once, and now the thing hasn't healed yet, the second time it hurts even more. And it's on the right side where you're going to do it with force, because that's the side that you use, either your hand or your foot, that's the side you use with force. Who the cause of a dvar mitzvah? And the time that you're going to a dvar mitzvah. So what do you mean you're going to a dvar mitzvah? We know that shluchei mitzvah ain't a nizakim. When you're on the way to do a mitzvah, you don't get hurt. So how come you got hurt over here? The Marsha suggests over here, it's very interesting, the Marsha suggests that it was a case where shluchei mitzvah protect as long as they're involved in the mitzvah and think about the mitzvah. If they have hurim about something else, then they can't get hurt. And we know that the Olah comes to be Meratze al Hirei Alev. The Kapara of the Olah is brought in Hirei Alev. So he says exactly here, that's what it says. It says, Damnikov, a Meratze like Damola. And that's what over here. If you have Hirurim that take you away from the mitzvah, you're not going to be protected. And that when you get hurt then, that's Meratze like the Olah and these Hirei Alev. Nice, Marsha. He never broke bread on someone that wasn't his. He never broke on someone that was his. Miyom shamar al dato, the time that he was self-sufficient, lo ne'em yisudat aviv. He never took anything from his father's house. And that's what this whole story, Pinchas ben Yair, who didn't get any benefit from anyone else. That's why he refused to eat by anybody. And that's what's special about the whole story here. Like Rabbi said before, that Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, that was his shita. That's what he always did. Hashem made sure that he kept to his way. That even though in this time he had acquiesced to eat by Rabbi, nevertheless in the end, something happened that prevented him from eating by Rabbi because that was his shita. That's what he always kept. Since he was makpid, Hashem helped him to be makpid in this way and never breached that minhag that he had. Okay, we'll stop over here.